present.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to the honorable members of the committee. Chair, since the last time we met, we've made some changes to the document entitled Proposed Amendment for Consideration by the Portfolio Committee. The date of the document is 5 September 2007. I would want us to look at the last page of that document, and that is page 6. And have a look at the long title. Chair, what we are proposing is to amend the title as it currently reads.
Which document is this?
The document is entitled Proposed Amendment for Consideration by the Portfolio Committee, 5 September. Chair, we are proposing to omit the long tiger as it currently reads in the bill and to substitute it with the title as it appears in this document on page 6, and it reads thus: to amend the National Gambling Act 2004 so as to change certain definitions and insert new definitions to provide for the regulation of interactive gambling so as to protect society against the stimulation of the demand for gambling, to provide for the registration of players and opening of player accounts, to provide for the conditions applicable to interactive gambling licenses, to provide for further protection of minors and other persons vulnerable to the negative effects of gambling, and to prevent gambling from being associated with crime, money laundering, or financing of terrorist and related activities. Chair, we think that this long title encapsulates the scheme and the policy behind the bill as it appears. The next change that we have effected is reflected on page 2 of the document. And it's the line numbered 5, just above the heading clause 15. The proposal here seeks to deal with the issue around terrorist funding, and the concern was that we should try to strengthen the provisions that relate to money laundering and the financing of terrorist and related activities. So what we did is we looked at the wording in the appropriate legislation. We are therefore proposing to remove or to omit the word terrorist funding and to insert financing of terrorist and related activities. And Chair, the next change is on page 5.
Page 5
under clause 31. Again, here we are proposing to insert the relevant legislation that talks about the prevention of organized crime, the prevention of money laundering, and that is the Financial Intelligence Center Act, and the legislation that talks about terrorist activities, and that is the protection of constitutional democracy against terrorist and related activities. So what we have done here is to cross-reference within the bill against the relevant pieces of legislation. And we have taken the relevant wordings in those pieces of legislation so that we are in line, so that the bill is in line with those pieces of legislation. Chair, the rest of the other changes, we discussed them last time, and we will seek your guidance in terms of how we should proceed, whether we should then go to the bill and to the line-by-line reading of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that's what we should do now, to go to the bill line-by-line.
Thank you, Chair. At this stage, I will hand over to the legal team to walk us through the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. With your permission, then, Chair. Chair, may I ask, would it suffice for the purposes of the committee if we would, maybe very briefly and superficially as we possibly can within the time that has been allocated, if we move through the bill on the basis of a clause by clause, would that be sufficient, Chair? And maybe very, very briefly also in doing so then, just maybe quickly refer as we go along to the documents reflecting the amendments. If I then, my apologies, Chair, if I may then move to clause 1 of the bill, which starts on page...
Just a second, please. Mr. Lazarus, me, sir. Kindly put your switch on your mic.
Why don't we start with the title?
That is fine, Chair. Needless to say, that is right at the outset of the bill there on page 2. And if we reflect then on the very last page of our document dealing with the amendments, we will see that an amendment is then suggested to the effect that the current long title in the bill be omitted and that it be replaced in toto with the long title as it is reflected in the amendments document. Mr. Sibanda has already read that out to the committee, so if it's okay with you, Chair, I would not read it again. But clearly that whole long title on the last page of the set of amendments would then substitute the long title as we see it on page 2 of the bill.
Thank you. I've been talking to the committee selector about the motion of desirability. And perhaps I should just read that, because this is what we are doing now. We are not yet at the stage of the final one. This is just for the record. That in the opinion of the committee, legislation is desirable to amend the National Gambling Act 2004 and to amend the National Gambling Amendment Bill 2007 and provide for matters connected therewith, and that the bill referred to the committee be taken as a basis.
Thank you, Chair. If I may then proceed on page 2 of the bill, and maybe do so, as we can clearly see here, this is what we call the definitions clause, and all the amendments in clause 1 relate to the definition section of the Principal Act, which is section 1. On our amendment document under clause 1, we can see there in items number 1 and number 2 certain technical amendments being proposed. I would not deal with them in detail here unless specific questions maybe would arise. Just in fairness, maybe if I can refer to item 3 under clause 1, I can see. That is the amendment that's being proposed in respect of the definition of interactive provider. That is on page 3 of the bill, just below line 35. The initial intention here on the part of the DTI was to exclude P2P or so-called person-to-person betting from the ambit of the Act. Based on the testimony and the discussions in this regard, we now proposing an amendment to the effect that under that underlying portion in the definition of interactive provider, that it would be omitted. Item number 4 under clause 1, Chair, that relates to the definition of money laundering. At our previous meeting on Friday, we made available an extract from the Financial Intelligence Center Act depicting that definition of money laundering. We're simply inserting the definition here with a reference to the definition in the Financial Intelligence Center Act. Most of the other amendments in respect of these definitions are consequential in nature, and I think from a substantive perspective, we've dealt with all of them, Chair. I don't know whether anybody would like to ask any specific questions on clause 1, maybe.
Members, Prof. Giroz.
Yeah, I just want to say, to express my appreciation to the department for meeting a lot of our major objections right at the beginning, the question of ethics, of principles, and I think they've done a damn good job. Thank you. I don't often do that.
I'll reserve judgment on the damn part. Any other comments? Fine, let's move.
See, I then move on to page 4 of the bill, which is right at the top there, clause 2. A simple insertion on the interpretation of the Act, merely saying that in the application of this Act, consideration may be given to foreign and international law, to conventions, to declarations, protocols, and the rest. So it adds a bit of an international flavor to the application of the Act.
Just waiting for Mr. Labaskasny to be with us. You all right, Mr. Labaskasny? And I'm happy to see that Dr. Rabi is still with you, and you are still with you. No. Physically and mentally. I will not use this word in this committee, prostitute. I will not use it. Fine, sir.
Chair, I move on to clause 3 of the bill. We're still on page 4. There is the application of the Act, and just a new insertion to make it clear that the Act would also apply to, or that the Act would apply to all gambling activities licensed within the Republic. And as we can see there, at the end, clearly an exclusion from the application of this Act from what is provided for in the Lotteries Act.
Could we kindly direct Prof. Giroz, he came a minute or so late, as to which document we are dealing with. It's the one titled Proposed Amendments for Consideration by the Portfolio Committee dated 1st September. That's the base document.
Okay, just in fairness to Professor Churok, we're now dealing with the bill itself. So the page would be page 4 of the amendment bill itself. And it's clause number 3. My apologies, I think I said clause number 2. It's clause number 3, application of the Act.
Are we all okay with that?
Yeah. Okay, we stay in the bill. The next one is clause 4, setting out the purpose of the Act. There's been considerable discussion as far as this was concerned. If we read all those provisions under clause 4, under the purpose of the Act, we will see that most of them are socio-economic in nature. Most of them telling us that the broad objectives of this bill are to guard against the socio-economic ills of gambling. We see, for instance, there in F, the reference to protect minors and other vulnerable persons from the negative effects of gambling. And we also see there in H, protecting society against the stimulation of the demand for gambling, which is also something that we have in the long cycle now. And right at the bottom in I, we see the provision clearly pertaining to gambling being associated with crime or money laundering and the rest. Most of these then socio-economic in nature, Chair.
Thank you very much. Are we still on board there, members?
Chair, and when we discuss clause 5 in the bill, close to the bottom of page 4, we will see a number of these as we go along, and please pardon me if I then every now and then when we get to these simply say that this is a consequential amendment. It cuts no ice, it has no particular substance in itself, there's no specific policy consideration behind the amendment, it is purely consequential in nature. The one that we're seeing here in clause 5 is merely an insertion in the Act to what this bill is providing for, which is interactive gambling. We will see a number of those as we go along, Chair.
Thank you. You are still with us, Comrades. I see our good friend has formed his own party, Koti. Skopa. We can continue.
Thank you, Chair. Right at the bottom of page 4 of the bill, clause number 6, as we know so well by now, that the medium for this kind of interactive gambling would be the electronic medium, and this insertion does not purport to do anything more than merely to make it clear that a person would then in future be in a position to participate in these kind of gambling activities through the electronic medium.
Shinwam. My machine is working here. I said you must be sure that for me.
Mine
is. Here we're then moving on to page 5 of the bill. Right at the top of page 5 is clause number 7. This is a ministerial power to make regulations regarding specified games that may meet the criteria specified in subsection 1A. If we look at that subsection in the Principal Act, that we will see that we find there the criteria or the specifications pertaining to interactive gambling. And as we also know well by now, is that there are so many forms and kinds of interactive gambling. It would be very, very difficult to specify each and every one by name in the bill. So the structure in the Principal Act is such that it tries to set out criteria or principles or a framework within which you can categorize or classify all the different kinds of gambling games that we get. And here the Minister would then get the power to, by way of regulations, to further specify the games that would meet the criteria as interactive gambling games.
Chair, could we insert something there that these regulations should also be referred to the committee? We've done that before.
Yes,
not for adoption, but for information. If we never see these regulations, so we pass a law, and then the minister may pass regulations which are very wide-ranging. We've been through this many times, you know that. So you've agreed to it in the past. Can't we put it in now?
I think there's a formulation that he used in the past that addresses that. So let's look at the formulation that he used. It just runs the regulations past us before the final version. There is a format. We've covered this ground. So just look at what we have done in the past. It does not, yeah.
I don't think Professor Turok with respect is quite correct. We will just do the necessary, Jack.
Yeah.
Mike, let's make it routine in every bill.
I heard you without the mic, Prof. thank you.
Chair, we're in clause 8 of the bill, still on page 5. The heading interactive gambling transaction, this tells us in very, very simple terms, when does such a transaction start and when does it end? It starts when the player account is debited in the amount of the wager, and it stops or it concludes when the player account is credited with the amount of winnings in the case of a win, or when the player loses a game. So nothing more than to say here it starts and here it stops.
Okay.
If I may, Chair, we're then in clause 9, still on page 5. We've just seen now that there can be, for instance, a prize, there can be winning. What we have in this, it's a fairly lengthy new insertion in the Principal Act. The heading payment of prizes and remittance of profits and winnings. Now clearly there can be two kinds of winnings. The one can be in cash, the other can be in kind. If it's in cash, then it's very simple. Then the interactive provider must credit the player account of the player. If it's in kind, then it's not so simple. And then the rest of this clause spells out how the credit provider should go about in making sure that if a winning is in kind, how the goods can reach the player. There must be notification to the player, or there should be delivery of the goods to the player. If the player cannot be identified or cannot be found, then there's even a procedure for an application to the High Court to apply for the goods to be auctioned, and from the proceeds of that auction for the interactive provider to carry the costs of this whole procedure. So if it's money, simply the player account must be credited. If it's something in kind, then this procedure has to be followed. If we read it, we will see that it takes a fairly onerous burden on the interactive provider to make sure that if it may be this bottle, that the bottle will in the end reach the player.
Well, sure, it's definitely not a bottle of whiskey.
It was an unfortunate reference, Chair. I apologize for that. I had water in mind, though. Chair, if I may move on to clause 12, may it simply suffice, Chair, this is one of those consequentials, merely providing for the registration of a player in respect of interactive gambling activity. There is no substance to it, Chair. If I may, with your permission, move straight on to clause number 13, which has some substance in nature, albeit a very short clause. Clause 13 makes it very, very clear, we trust, that despite anything that may be said in the Principal Act in respect of the granting of credit for purposes of gambling activities, that no interactive provider may extend any credit to a person for the purposes of engaging in interactive games. That is not here, but if we look at the offences structure of the Principal Act, we will see that if an interactive provider would indeed then grant credit for purposes of this kind of gambling, that a statutory offence would be committed and the provider would be liable to the fines prescribed there. So there is the essence, no credit for the purposes of this kind of gambling. Here my colleague was so kind as to indicate an oversight on my part. In dealing with clause 11 in the bill, can we then just reflect on the amendments? In the amendment document, Professor Turok, that is the document proposed amendments and the date 5 September 2007. And as we can see there, that we've got definite amendments in respect of clause 11. The first material one is there in item 3 under clause 11. That is page 1 of our amendments document, the 5 September document. Item 3. And we will recall from Friday's meeting that the idea was here to consolidate two different provisions in the bill that were duplicating one another and overlapping one another, just to consolidate them into one, and also in the same breath to make clear that we deal with the issue of the minors, that we deal with the issue of the age of 18, and that we deal with the issue of the statement that has to be obtained and the identity that has to be obtained in respect of age. And then the second material amendment in respect of clause 11 is on page 2 of our 5 September document. Page 2. I will try to be very brief. Here, Chair, we will recall that this was based on the testimony that was given by the gentleman that was here on behalf of Treasury on the FICA requirements, and we humbly suggest that if the committee would accept this amendment, it would make it very, very clear that if money is in a player account, that money cannot be converted into anything else, nothing in kind, be it chips, be it e-currency or whatever we would like to call it, it has to remain money and nothing else. And then in number 2, just below that, also making it equally clear that when the funds are moved from that player account, it will not go anywhere but back to the nominated account. That is the account that is possibly held with FNB or some other commercial bank on behalf of the player. So there can be no transfer of funds from a player account to any place but the initial nominated account from where those funds emanated.
Thank you. I think we covered that substantially, and we're all in agreement that we needed to tighten that.
Here we now on clause 12 of the bill again, which is page 7 of our bill. Can I simply say, this is a consequence, I think I've done that, Chair. Clause 12 is merely a consequential amendment, and I'm sorry, Chair, we've dealt with clause 13 as well. That is when Mr. Shibanda just indicated to me that I haven't dealt with the amendments. So we've done on 12, we've done on 13, and in clause 14, this is also consequential. If I can very briefly say here, we see the insertion of websites. The insertion of websites. Now clearly at the moment we've got the what we call the land-based facilities. For instance, a casino, a land-based casino. So we don't deal with websites. There the license must be somewhere displayed physically in connection with the land-based facility. Now that we've got this electronic kind of gambling. That would not suffice. Clearly we need the websites, and within a website we will see that there is a specific requirement saying that somewhere on your website the license, for instance, must be displayed. So in that sense it is consequential, merely making provision for the websites in respect of interactive gambling.
Thank you. Certain members comment.
Chair, I then move on to page 15 of the bill, which is on clause 15 of the bill, which is on page 8. And if I may straight away move to the 5 September document, because there we can see that we have a very material amendment in respect of clause number 15. It simply says that no person must provide any advertising or promotion services in respect of interactive gambling. And it carries on to say that despite any other provisions in the Principal Act, an interactive provider must not advertise nor promote any activity in respect of interactive gambling. So we then have the position at the moment that in terms of the Principal Act, certain other forms of gambling, that there can be promotion or advertising in respect of those, but in respect of this new form of gambling, Parliament would then make it clear that no kind of promotion or advertisement would be allowed in respect of interactive gambling.
I think it's a great improvement, but it's not very elegant. And I think if we do law, we should try and be elegant. And why not say that it is unlawful for a person to so-and-so. A person must not. You know, which person? You know, it's not elegant for me. Is that petty?
Point taken. Any other comments? So we look at how to make the intention more clear.
See, Professor Turok is quite correct. I mean, this language is kind of unusual. Unfortunately, at the moment, if we refer to the Principal Act, we will find a variety of these. But A person must. But clearly, Chair, that it's sort of, it's not eloquent language.
Can we move on that eloquent note? Before that, Dr. Market.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. It would help me if maybe the sentence was structured for me. Would it be unlawful for any person or unlawful for a person? I think that
in law, a person includes your any person. Mr. Lavaskasmi,
I agree with Professor Turok. I think it's, you know, there's such a strong feeling because of minors and all. You know, you put everything in place and these guys are terribly clever between the age of 16 and 18 on computers. And I think it should be pretty straightforward instead of, you know, just let's say it as it is. Well, you know, it is unlawful for any interactive. It makes it clear if we're dealing with interactive, we're not affecting the current situation of casinos. We're dealing with this new form of gambling. And let's say it as it is. I totally agree with Professor Turok.
Thanks. I think the point has been adequately emphasized.
We will do the necessary change. That takes care of clause 15. We stay in the bill on page 8. Clause 16, please allow me not to say anything, Chair. It's one of those consequentials, there's the website again. And even the same thing in clause number 17, there we've got the website again. The only thing that is in some way material in clause number 17 is right at the bottom of page 8 of the law. They're giving the minister once again the power to prescribe standards in respect of security, access and maintenance of an interactive provider's website.
Okay.
Here we then move on to page 9 of the bill, which is clause 18. And if we read it, we will simply see that it makes provision for registers to be kept by the board in respect of these websites that must be held by interactive providers, and also setting out the manner in which they should be displayed. And then before we deal with clause 19 in the bill, we then need to reflect on our 5 September document at the bottom of page 2. Now this appears to be a fairly long insertion in the Principal Act. It starts there at the bottom of page 2 of the 5 September document, and it runs to the top of page 4, to the top of page 4 of our document. And once again, allow me, Chair, please, to say that all these amendments are consequential. We have at the moment only the provincial licensing authorities being in a position to issue gambling licenses. Now, clearly, in future, the board would have a similar power to issue solely interactive gambling licenses and nothing else. So purely on that basis, we need a number of consequential amendments in the Act. And what we're seeing here in the whole of these new insertions of Section 30 and of Section 31, they are all related to this new industry and the new power of the board to issue licenses in respect of this new industry. Apart from that, there's no policy, there's no substance whatsoever, Chair.
Thank you.
Chair, the next one, we're back in the bill. Page 9 of our bill, and this is clause 19, a number of FICA requirements have been considered in this respect, and we will see them. I'm sorry, Chair. Clause 19 relates to the jurisdiction of the board. This now should make it clear that the jurisdiction in respect of interactive gambling licenses is that of the board, but we must keep in mind that all that we have here is subject to Part B of the Principal Act. We discussed that in our previous meetings, and we also see there lower down in Clause 19 one of the FICA requirements in relation to the Financial Intelligence Centre Act, but the essence of Clause 19 is to give the board the jurisdiction to exercise the necessary powers in respect of interactive gambling. Here there is a single amendment on our 5 September document in respect of this clause 19, and it relates to nothing but the insertion of the word interactive, just to provide for this new kind of gambling.
Your document is omit interactive.
My apologies to Professor Churuk, I've been speaking through my neck. It is indeed the omission of the word interactive to make it clear that these FICA requirements would apply to all forms of gambling and not only to interactive gambling. My apologies, Chair.
Thank you. I can move.
Chair, we then move on to clause 20, still on page 9 of the bill. We've just now seen the clause dealing with the jurisdiction of the board in 19, and here we have, as a consequence of that clause, clause number 20, all the responsibilities that the board would have in exercising its powers in respect of interactive gambling. I would not read them for the sake of time, Chair, but everything that is provided for in here are nothing but responsibilities that the board will carry in future in respect of interactive gambling. We see, for instance, maybe just in fairness, I could just very briefly indicate, for instance, there we see provisions relating to internal control systems for licenses, that is in B. We see in C the inspection as it relates to websites, supervision, review of licenses. Those are all the responsibilities that the board will have. And then, Chair, on our 5 September document, there is an amendment being proposed in respect of this clause 20. The only one that is substantive is that item 1 under clause 20 of the 5 September document. The effect would be that the board would be in a position to request any person to produce a certificate of suitability in respect of goods or services being provided relating to interactive gambling. So if there's, for instance, a technical kind of person providing a specific function in respect of a gambling machine, then the board would be in a position to request that person to produce a certificate of suitability stating that that person is properly qualified to do what he or she needs to do.
Thank you very much. I would like to welcome the chairperson of the National Council of Provinces and Professor Chang. Professor Churok, if you so wish. Oh, she wanted to.
We have an arrangement.
Prof, I'm not sure what you had early this morning, but it's working for you. Mr. Labuskasny, sir.
Just on, if we add the new Roman 3, 5, you do the consequential renumbering, eh?
That's correct, sir. We take care of that administratively. Yes, sir.
Thank you. Everyone is wide awake this morning. Glad to see that, Mr. Labuskasny. The same applies to you. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. We then in clause 21 of our bill, still on page 10, Chair, sorry for the repetition, there is one of those consequentials again. Nothing of substance in there. The next one of substance is clause number 22 of the bill, still on page 10, Chair. Here there's been considerable discussion. This relates to the distinction between the powers of the minister and the powers of the board. We will recall that there were certain inconsistencies as far as this was concerned, giving the same power to both the minister and to the board when it comes to attaching conditions to an interactive gambling license. If we read in our 5 September document, the amendment being proposed here, that is in item 1 under clause 22 of the 5 September document, we will see that it makes it now very clear that the conditions to be attached to a license is the power of the board, but the minister has got an overriding power to set the framework or set the criteria, establish the principles within which those conditions that will be attached by the board will be attached to an interactive gambling license.
again, I think a question of elegance. The minister must provide a national license. Now, why can't we say that the provision of a national license resides with the national minister? Because if you say the minister must provide a license, you know, when? Yesterday, last week, and for what purpose? If there's an application, it's odd, you know. I think it has to be very simple and say the provision of a license for interactive gambling resides with the minister, or the power to separate. Clear. May I suggest that?
Thanks, Prof. Mr. Stredos.
Chair, just guide us specifically in the...
Line A, line 45. I presume you're there, or am I in the wrong place?
On this.
Yes, right. Now, that says, an interactive gambling license must be issued as a national license. Why can't we say that it's the powers to provide an interactive license resides with the national minister? You know, I'm something like that.
And what's the relevant...
I've got a chair, and may I give an undertaking that we will...
And the next clause goes on to say the minister may prescribe the conditions. That's fine, because that's his job. So he's got one job, to provide a license where power resides with him and not with anybody else. Secondly, when he does give the license, he prescribes the conditions. I think that's fine.
I'll take Mr. Labuskasny and Comrade Mike.
Sorry, if I understand Professor correctly, no problem that that the minister must issue the license, but I think we can't surely omit as a national license. You know.
Professor is in agreement with you, Mr. Labuskasny. He does not delete or exclude that.
Sorry, Chair, just a point of clarity, that the minister will not issue the license, but the National Gambling Board will issue the license. It has been clearly said, it's just the consequential language that he's talking about. But just to put it on record, that is the board. Thank you.
But you see, an interactive license must be issued.
Just a second, Prof, I'll come back to you. Comrade Mike.
I just wanted to show that the content of this is that it must be a national license. The minister might give a provincial license or a what, but the clause here specifies that it must never be a provincial or a local government license, but a national license. Thank you.
And lady.
Chair, I think Honorable Mackay is correct. The idea here is to distinguish between a national license and a provincial one. So we are saying that an interactive gambling provider must be issued with a national license. And then somewhere else we're dealing with who actually issues that license, and it is the National Gambling Board. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, members. Professor Mike, I agree you are also wide awake. To come back to Honorable Comrade Tasmani's question as to what Mr. Labuskasny and Prof had this morning, the answer I got from them, we did this by telepathy, it's also interactive, but it works with the mind. Their response was that he does not have an age limit. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Within page 11 of the bill, clause number 23, and if we reflect on the Principal Act, we will see that there's a similar provision to this in the Principal Act in respect of casino licenses. The essence of this clause is, once again, we have a ministerial power for the minister to make regulations that would specify the maximum number of interactive gambling licenses that may be issued. And also there in B, specific criteria that the minister must consider in arriving at the number of maximum licenses or interactive gaming licenses that should be issued. We've got reference there to the incidence and social consequences of compulsive and addictive gambling. We've got black economic empowerment. We've got new entrants in the gambling industry. We've got diversity of ownership within the gambling industry. And we've got efficiency of operation in the gambling industry. And we've got competition as well. So in setting this number clearly, there are certain definite criteria that Parliament would prescribe to the minister in arriving at that maximum. What we have right at the bottom of that clause 23 in sub 3 is a provision saying that should the minister at any point in time prescribe a number of maximum licenses that may be less than the existing licenses, then no further interactive licenses shall be issued. Those having the vested rights then, in respect of those licenses in excess, they will be in a position to carry on and conduct their business until we get to a point in time where the number comes in below the maximum ceiling again. That is the essence of the clause there.
Chair, that clause confirms the point I was making about regulations coming here. You see, the number of the maximum number is a matter for the conscience of the nation, and that means that Parliament must have a say. So if the minister has something to drink in the morning and then exceeds or allows the maximum to increase or whatever, then Parliament should be able to say we don't agree because this is our bill and this is a moral question. The committee has taken a position on the morality and therefore the maximum. We had this discussion in connection with the gaming machines where the department came with a large number, or whoever it was, proposing huge numbers of machines. And we objected, and indeed we won that particular argument. So the maximum number is a crucial issue for this committee, and therefore we should be informed.
We agree with you, Procurator. Suffice to say that I didn't think the minister's coffee was that strong in the morning. Dr. Rabbit?
So, is it possible now at this very early stage to determine the maximum or minimum number of interactive gaming licenses? Shouldn't we give it some time? Because this is still in a very early stage, Chair. I mean, if we define numbers now, my contention is let's see how many people apply for interactive gambling licenses and then put down a number. But with due respect, I don't think we've got adequate information to determine a maximum or minimum number of interactive gaming licenses, Chairman.
Dr. Ravi, I think at this stage you are speaking more to the principle that at some future date we need to arrive as to what number is requisite under the objective conditions in South Africa. We are not yet speaking to a number in my understanding. Would you like to comment, good folks from the department?
Chair, you are correct. At this stage, we actually don't know exactly how many licenses will be required. And we'll go through an exercise, and as Professor Rock has indicated, Parliament probably would also have to be consulted with that regard. Thank you.
Thanks, good folks. Mr. Labuschagne, sir.
Sorry, Chair, I'm not sure if it comes in here or later. The guidance of the department. The question of by law
in the law, you know, in the bill, to ensure that the conditions of an license or an interactive provider must be substantially the same as the conditions that are applicable to land-based casinos. You know, I mean, we can't have them getting, say, more favorable or relaxed conditions. They should be exactly, at least substantially the same. I would say exactly the same. You know, buildings, you know, whatever.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Lavaskas. Point well made. May I suggest that when you speak next, you move your mic just a little closer to your mouth, or it was as if you are speaking through your ear.
Chair, that is what the amendment on clause 22 of the bill would like to take care of, making it very clear that the power of the board is to issue these licenses and to attach conditions to those licenses. But the minister would be in a position to make regulations that would set out the framework, the criteria, and the norms that the board would have to take into account in arriving at the conditions to be attached to a license.
Now, it's all very well to say the minister, you know, sets the conditions and so forth. But what's to say that the minister can set conditions that are less onerous? You see, the point I'm trying to make is that conditions, we say the minister can make conditions, but the minister can then make conditions that are substantially different from those that are relating to land-based casinos. You see, that's my point. It's no good saying the minister, so he can, as I said, he can have a cup of coffee or in the morning and make less onerous conditions. So all I'm just saying is that any conditions pertaining to interactive licenses, we should say, yeah, so the minister can't sort of have a rush of blood or something, shall be substantially or shall be, in the same as into land-based casinos, subject to the realities of, I don't know, interactive gambling or something.
Department?
If we may ask that in considering this, that we just consider the whole picture when it comes to this. If we've now conceded to Professor Turok's sentiment that the minister would never be in a position to, in isolation, to make these regulations. And if we read here, we will see that these conditions must be prescribed. The minister can't issue a letter to a provider saying these are your conditions. It must be, the media must be by way of regulations. Those regulations must come before Parliament. And if we look at the regulation section in the Principal Act, we will also see that there's a very specific period of consultation that the minister has to follow in arriving at any of these regulations. I'm not saying that it satisfies what Mr. Lopeskogny has suggested, but that is the whole structure of this, that the minister is then first of all confronted, so to speak, with this committee in Parliament in respect of those regulations, and apart from that, would the minister be confronted with all those requirements in respect of consultation in making those regulations. I don't know whether that would take your matter a bit further, Mr. Lopeskogny.
What is so difficult about saying that any interactive gambling license must be the conditions pertaining to any interactive license must be substantially the same as those pertaining to land-based casinos? I mean, we're saying you can do this. You know, it's like, and I wish I could use a Chinese proverb to illustrate it, but it wouldn't be applicable, I suppose. But you're making things unnecessarily complicated. To say he can and he must is going before this and it'll come to Parliament and there's a whole new committee and
couple of times. Oh, it's so simple. Just make a statement. The conditions applicable, he makes the conditions. We're not saying that. But the conditions applicable to interactive licenses should be substantially the same as those applicable to land-based casinos.
Yeah,
and then the conditions, whatever conditions he makes, to make sure there's an equilibrium. That how he provides it. He knocks them all, but skier the armor when he sell it on. And we'll say this, and we're saying it here.
Chair,
thanks, Mr. Lovecutton.
Chair, we've been saying again and again that this is a new field. You know, the computer is a different mechanism to the land-based. It has all sorts of dimensions. This committee is not competent to make judgments about the technology and what you do with technology. I think we should not go too far in that direction. We've got a safeguard. And after all, our job is not to prescribe. Our job is oversight. So let the officials and the minister work. This is a new field. And we will then sit on it and make sure that he does the right thing, you know. I think that's the right way around.
Prof, I don't think what you are contributing and what Mr. Labuschagne is putting on the table is substantially different. What I understand Mr. Labuschagne to be saying in all fairness is that the condition applicable to interactive providers, they should not be less onerous than those that apply presently to land-based, so that we look at those conditions so that there's a fair degree of equity across board in terms of provisions and everything that applies to them. So I think it's a fair comment from Mr. Labuschagne. Let's look at that aspect. If we need to tighten the belt and braces approach, I understand him to be saying it in that regard. Thank you. We can move.
That is fine, Chair. We then move to, we're still on page 11 of the bill, clause 24, close to the bottom. Once again, here we see the clear indication that a person who wishes to apply for an interactive gambling license should do so to the board. And then there's the distinction in B, if it's an interactive gambling personnel license, then that person must apply not to the board, but to the relevant provincial licensing authority. And then on our 5 September document, we will see the amendment there. It is nothing but terminology, that license is not an interactive gambling personnel license, but it should read like the other terminology that we find in the Principal Act. It should be a interactive gambling employment license. But clearly there is a distinction. The interactive provider license is issued by the board, whereas the interactive gambling employment license is issued by the relevant provincial licensing authority.
Thank you very much. Could you kindly close the door behind you, Mr. Hendricks? I've noted you, Comrade Mark. Just to say that more and more people will be joining us as we get closer to the presentation on the industrial policy. But I must also say that the minister might be slightly late. There's a cabinet meeting in 10 days. So when we get to that, the director general is here. He would likely start if the minister is not yet here. But we are still continuing with the work ahead. Comrade Mark, you have something?
Yeah, thank you, Comrade Chair. I'm just a bit slow here. I need to be educated. I'm still on 23A, which says the number and geographical location of existing licensed casinos and interactive providers operating within, meaning that the minister will decide on some of those things, among other things. I'm just interested in the geographical location of interactive providers. Is it referring to equal distribution maybe of the provinces? Because my little understanding is that it's some sort of an internet, and wherever you are doesn't mean anything. Is the content trying to say that maybe you mustn't find that all providers are in Gauteng, Limpopo doesn't have anything, or what is the actual content of that plan? Thank you.
The national aspect has been covered, but I will indulge that they make a comment. Department?
Thank you, Chair. I think Honorable Mate is correct to say that interactive gambling really is borderless. And in that respect, the geography sector may not really be significant in determining the number of licenses. So other factors may really be significant, but not necessarily geography. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Dr. Mike, are you with us?
I don't know what then is he trying to say. Is he saying the clause needs to be changed, or so I don't know what's on.
Thank you, Chair. I think to be very specific to the matter, when we talk of geography in terms of interactive gambling provider, is the physical constituency of the head office or the operation itself, let alone that accessibility is borderless, but that company will be based somewhere in a particular province or town or physical address within the country. So when we make a consideration in terms of the number of those licenses, we can consider that it's some of the factors which must be considered. If for argument's sake, it might not be true that all of them are located in Gauteng. When we prescribe the numbers, we might say there can be an extra 5 which must be located outside Gauteng just to ensure the spread. So that's where the geographic comes in within interactive gambling. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Dr. Mike, I can see you are nodding in agreement. The camera is still up in here. We are in your ambulance, folks.
Thank you, Chair. If I, with your permission, can move on, then read on page 11 of the bill, right at the bottom, the next clause is clause 25. Here is the authority to issue the national license again, and the whole intention of the insertion here is simply to make it clear that the provincial licensing authorities would be in a position to issue all gambling-related licenses, save for this new license in respect of interactive gambling. There is nothing more in substance to the clause there.
Thank you.
The next clause is on page 12 of the bill, right at the top there, which is clause 26. Once again, we see the distinction between the power of the board in respect of the interactive licenses and the power of the provincial licensing authorities to issue the interactive gambling employment licenses as opposed to the interactive gambling license. There is a very small amendment being proposed here. That is our 5 September document, right at the top of our 5 September document. That is clause 26. Once again, it relates to nothing but terminology. It is once again the substitution of personnel with the word employment. If I may move on here to clause number 27, still on page 12 of the bill, national license procedures, once again, pardon the repetition, this has got
nothing in it save for consequential amendments as they relate to the power of the board opposed to the powers of the provincial licensing authorities. The next one is clause 28, chair, still on page 12, giving the board the power to not only issue the licenses but also to suspend the licenses, to revoke them, and also to amend those licenses should the need arise. The next one is clause 13, right at the bottom, 30, right at the bottom of page 12. This relates to the conditions to be attached to interactive gambling licenses. In the interest of time, I will not elaborate on this any further, Chair. We discussed it a while ago, making it clear that it would be for the Minister to prescribe the broad criteria and the framework within which the provincial licensing authorities would then be entitled to attach the conditions to these licenses. The next one is clause number 31 of the bill. That is on page 13. And if we refer to, if I may deal collectively, Chair, with both clause number 31 and...
Interrupt on that. Going back to C, the board may issue a license with or without conditions. I thought we said that the minister was going to prescribe. So does the ministry prescribe and then the board issues the license in accordance with the conditions prescribed? Is that it?
Can you just clarify that, because there's the national competence and the provincial boards?
That is correct. There would be now indeed be consistency between those two powers, in that here the provincial licensing authority would have the power to attach the conditions to the license. Whereas in the previous clause incorporating our amendment, it would be clear that the minister would be in a position to do no more than to provide the framework and the criteria within which those conditions should be attached.
Thanks.
Chair, if we may deal collectively with clauses number 31 and 32 on page 13 of the bill. And once again, on our 5 September document, we see certain amendments being proposed in respect of both those clauses. They all flow from the testimony that was given by Treasury in respect of the FICA requirements. And based on that testimony, we will see the insertion in these clauses of 3 separate Acts of Parliament, the one being the Prevention of Organized Crime Act, the other being the Financial Intelligence Centre Act, and the last one being the Protection of Constitutional Democracy Against Terrorist and Related Activities. All these amendments are in connection with the sentiment that Parliament should make sure in this bill that gambling should in no way be associated with crime, with money laundering, or with the funding of terrorist or related activities. We're on the bottom of page 13, Chair. This is another insertion in the Principal Act. It's got no substance. It once again relates to nothing but consequential amendments to be effective to make sure that there is this proper distinction between the provincial licensing authorities and the board. If I may then move on to page 14 of the bill, clause 34, right at the top there, the power being given to the board in considering these licenses, certain requirements that must be met in respect of the websites of interactive license providers. The next one is clause 35, Chair, that relates to the probity reports and giving the board the power, or not only the power, but giving the responsibility to the board to ensure that these probity reports should be conducted as prescribed in the Principal Act. The next one is clause 36. Just new insertions. This relates to Section 65 of the current Act, and we see here a number of new objects or functions, responsibilities being given to the board when it comes to the monitoring and evaluating the gambling industry's competitiveness, guidelines for effective, uniform and consistent implementation of the Act, and also the responsibility to collect and make available data for the Minister in respect to the manner that this industry would be conducted.
Thank you. What's the question of competitiveness got to do with controlling and curbing gambling? Why does competitiveness come into it? It gives it a certain credibility and a certain legitimacy. As if to say, if it is competitive, it's fine.
Thank you, Chair. I think in line with the previous discussions that we have had around the policy behind interactive gambling, I think we can take the point that Professor Turok is making and deal with the issue of competitiveness, actually omitted from the bill. Thank you.
Dr. Ravi?
Excuse me, but shouldn't competitiveness be seen to, that we benchmark ourselves with other emerging countries and so forth? That be in line with them. That's what I was. Isn't that the reason for this particular wording in the bill?
Dr. Ravi is forgetting DTI speak. DTI uses the word competitiveness in the positive sense that we should be as good as anybody else, namely as efficient and as cheap in our exports, this kind of language. Being competitive about this is a kind of standard we're applying. Now, if you want to say that the industry should be efficient or it should be run in a highly disciplined, regulated way, that's fine. But don't use the word competitiveness because it's like racing. We're not racing. Welcome the proposal from the officials.
Chair, yes, I agree with what Professor Turek has said here, but this is a potential source of tax revenue to the country. And we're going to compete in an international market. I mean, we cannot forget this.
I protest strongly.
Relax, Prof. Turok. You don't have to protest strongly yet. The issue that you have just covered, I won't repeat what you have said, Prof. We covered that area. The issue that you are raising, the reality that there would be a fee, just like the land-based people would need to pay some fee in order to run their operations. We also covered that. So it's not competitiveness in the sense. It does not compromise the tax or whatever revenue would be due to the state. So that is covered for. Would you like to comment further?
Chair, I think you've articulated it quite well. We use the word competitiveness, you'll remember, in the initial briefing to refer to attractiveness, and we're going to use tax policy to make sure that service providers are attracted into South Africa. But subsequent to the discussions that we've had, I think we'd rather take Prof. Turok's point in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Shall we move?
We're getting closer to the end, and I will do my utmost to serve the interest of time. We're on page 14 of the bill.
But not at the expense of the bill.
I would not do so with respect, Chair. We're on page 14 of the bill, right at the bottom, that is clause number 37. Once again, we have a ministerial power. If the minister at any point in time would deem it appropriate to approach an MEC in a province as to the inefficiency of the provincial licensing authority in that province, then this is the power to the minister to rely on. Should there be ineffectiveness, should there be inefficiency, then here is a mechanism for the minister to, on a political basis, to approach the relevant MEC and to take up the matter and discuss ways and means of how the problems can be redressed. Unless there's any question in that respect here, I will move on to clause number 38 on the bottom of page 14, still page 14 of the bill. This is new insertions in the so-called offences and penalty clauses that we find in the Principal Act. As we will recall, based on this bill, a number of new offences have been created in respect of the act of gambling, and as a consequence, there is a need to adjust the provisions in respect of offences and penalties, and that is exactly what's being proposed by clause number 38. If I may move on to page 15, the last page of the bill, clause number 39, right at the top there, Chair. This was also discussed at length during our public hearings. Here is the power to the board to delegate certain powers assigned to the board in terms of this bill to a provincial licensing authority, and then going on simply to set out the manner in which such a delegation should be made by the board to the provincial licensing authority. There is, the next one is clause number 40. I'm sorry,
I don't want to be difficult, but is there any kind of control over the provincial licensing authority? Who does it report to? Because we have known under the Liquor Act that provincial and local licensing authorities sometimes behave in ways that we would not approve of. So if you're delegating powers down, who controls that authority?
Thank you, Chair. I think the provincial entities or provincial gambling board are separate institutions on their own. They've got their own board members who control them. And over and above that, the external auditors, in terms of the new GAAP requirements now, they also monitor performance, which is one measure. Secondly, they've got also internal auditors which monitor performance as well. Thirdly, there's a provision in terms of Section 33 of the Act whereby the National Gambling Board also has a duty to evaluate compliance monitoring on the PLA. So there are a number of measures, let alone that they also report to the member of Executive Council of that particular provincial licensing authority. Thanks.
Thank you.
Chair, the next one is clause 40 on the last page of the bill. Once again, it's purely consequential. We've got new insertions of actions, of sections within the Principal Act. Those sections relate to the new provisions in respect of interactive gambling. There is no substance in there or anything that can cut ice. It is purely consequential. There is, however, Chair, just before we get to the last clause of the bill, if I can refer to our 5 September document. That is page 6 of the 5 September document, right at the top. There is a proposal here that an amendment should be inserted in the Principal Act in respect of tax on interactive gambling. I will not elaborate again, Chair. We will recall from our previous meetings that there was indeed a clause in this bill dealing with the imposition of taxes, with the levying of duties and rest. That clause was omitted from the bill based on advice that we received from the state law advisors to the effect that should that clause remain in the bill, it would render this bill a money bill and we would have to follow totally a different legislative procedure. So the mere suggestion is here that, needless to say, that the necessary with respect would then have to be done by the Minister of Finance pertaining to tax legislation, and this is nothing more than an enabling provision, enabling the responsible minister to at a later stage introduce the necessary legislation.
Thank you very much.
comment. Going. Going. Gone. Auction. Mover, seconder. Prof, you are moving. Dr. Ravi seconds. So, what we need to do is to read the report. The Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, having considered and examined the National Gambling Amendment Bill, referred to it and classified by the JTM as a Section 75 bill, reports the bill with amendments. Thank you. I would like to thank the department members and all stakeholders that participated in all the public hearings to bring us to where we are today. So our leg of this particular bill has been done. It will go to our colleagues in the NCOP. We next deal with the second item on our agenda, industrial policy. We welcome the DG. And I must also make mention that this second leg is a joint meeting between NA and NCOP. So I request the chair of the NCOP to come forward, to come and join me here.
Okay, so you're going to take it from here.